Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike, we unfortunately have to start this podcast off talking about the big news from the world of Blogski and Podski Wee Wee of the last couple of weeks. The piece I wrote pretty much ripping certain segments of the Ryder fan base. I have tried to move on numerous times, but the comments and the tweets keep coming. I knew this was going to strike a nerve. I'm sure when I told you I was writing this and you read it, I'm sure you knew it was going to strike a nerve.
Yep.
I did not expect it to last this long, frankly. I'm really just trying to move. Look, I made an opinion. There are segments of the Ryder fan base who, for lack of a better term, have their heads up their butts. They annoy me, but there's segments of all fan bases that annoy me, even Tiger Cat fans. Yep. The problem is that with the Riders, they like to hold their supposed superiority over everybody. And I was just sick of it. There was a lot of support out there from fans across the league, even Rider fans who think these people are jerks. But like, people are taking it too far. Look, this is the last I'm going to speak on it. Yeah, I wrote it. I stand by it. I just don't want to talk about it anymore. You got anything to add?
Just everybody just calm down a bit. You know, everybody has their opinions. So I just want to say shout out to all the good. And, what's the word? I'm not. Just all the good Ryder fans out there that have a brain. And that's all I have to say.
All right. So, I believe there's a bit of a Mikey rant this week about Calgary and Ottawa.
Yes, sir.
Let's get that out of the way.
All right. So when the name Red Blacks came out, I was like, you know, when they first announced it, I was like, that's not the best name, but I've grown to like it. But the Stampeders need to get rid of the black in their uniform. There's a team called the Red Blacks, people. Let's get rid of the black in the Stampeders uniform. I mean, is it that hard? Can we get rid of it, please? This is absolute madness, you maniacs. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay, I'm with Mike on this one. I don't really remember when Calgary
red and white. Just go back to red and white for this day.
Yeah, when did they? I don't know when they started bringing in the black. Like, I know black is really, like, it's a popular color, obviously, but I don't remember when Calgary started really incorporating the black. I always remember them as red and white. I know there was a little bit of black when Flutie was there, like the outline of the numbers, I believe, was black, but that was about it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's not their predominant color. It seems like their colors now are red and black. Yep. And yeah, you're right. With a team called the Red Blacks, it's probably time to minimize the black in the Calgary uniform just a touch. You don't need so much black out there.
Yeah. And I think it's more of a Reebok thing because they make the jerseys. So maybe they can't like, cause they just remade them, didn't they, last year? So I don't know if they're going to do that right away, but please, like, this, it's just do it. I mean, it just looks silly. It just looks silly.
Okay. So there's not a lot of news this week. I mean, we could talk about the Bo Levi Mitchell extension. I'm sure we're both on board thinking the same thing. Great deal by Calgary. Great for the league. I think Mitchell is the next step in the quarterback evolution. He's going to be the next top star in this league. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Again, there's not much news to discuss, so you might be asking yourself why we decided to record this week anyway. And I came up with a little interesting idea that Mike agreed with, and we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to do favorite things. This is our favorite things podcast. Not Oprah. We're not going to be handing out cars or homes or anything like that. We're going to talk about some of our – oh, wait. Are we? Oh, crap. we'll cut this out. We're going to talk about our favorite things to do with the CFL. Just not just now, but in the past, like just what we love about the league. Let's start off with some Ticat stuff. Mike, what was your favorite single season that the Ticats ever had?
Well, this might be a little bit of an obvious choice, but I'm going to go 1999. Grey Cup champs. Last time we were Grey Cup champs. I mean, what a team we had that year. Just to name a few players here, you know, Danny Mac, Darren Flutie, Andrew Grigg, Archie Amerson, Joe Montfort, Rob Hitchcock. I mean, it was just a fabulous year, obviously. You know, the ending in the Grey Cup victory at BC Place. One game that really stands out for me, actually, is the East Final against Montreal. One play, particularly. It was third down, and I believe it was third down one or something. And they called a pass play. Fairly long pass play, and it went to I can't remember the guy's name, but it was a defensive back that was lined up there on offense, and they threw it up and he made a great catch, and it was just I'll never forget that play. It was, you know, Ronnie Lancaster had balls of steel, and it was just phenomenal. It was a great year. I, you know, looking back on it now, I was kind of young and I didn't really appreciate the Grey Cup victory. I wish I was a little bit older so I could appreciate a little bit more, but that would have to be my favorite season of all time for the Ticats.
Yeah, that for our lifetime at least, that is the obvious choice, but the obvious choice isn't always wrong. I mean, I was alive when they won in 86, but I was 4 and wasn't even watching football at the time, so I don't recall the 86 season. Just so that we're not it's not just an echo chamber in here and we're just repeating what each other said. I'm going to pick a different season. 99 is the obvious answer because we won the cup. 2009 really rekindled my love of the Tiger Cats. I'd been living in Toronto for a long time and had just moved back to Hamilton and decided, let's go to a couple games. A couple games turned into a few games. A few games ended up turning into, I think that season in total, I went to 12 games. I went to however many regular season games I had in Toronto, went to all 9 home games, and of course the home playoff game. And it was kind of the resurgence of Tiger Cat football. It was, they made the playoffs for the first time since 2004. It was a fun team to be around. You know, Dave Stalla was here, hometown guy, played fantastically. That defense, they had guys like Jamal Johnson and Markeith Knowlton, Kevin Glenn, who I've long been a supporter of and a big fan of, was the quarterback here. It was just to see what the team meant to the city. Tiger Cat pride was back. No doubt, number one would have to be 99, but if I do have a little bit of a personal relationship with 2009.
That was a good year, except for the playoff game. But
you know what? And I think about that, losing the playoff game, yeah, it sucked. But and I know I'm about to praise someone who is universally loathed by CFL fans, but watching highlights afterwards, Rod Black's call when the Cats came back to tie the game, and just you hear the crowd roar, and his call of the Hamilton Tiger Cats have come back to tie. As silly as that sounds, because you tied, it's a playoff game, you didn't win, and we ended up losing the game anyway. It was just such a phenomenal. I don't know what he. Sometimes when the moons are aligned and everything just comes together, he can actually make those big time calls. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of those ones that sticks out to me. Even though I was at the game, so obviously I didn't see it until afterwards. Just it really helped encapsulate what that season and that game especially sort of felt like. It was like, it's almost like just getting that tie and being back in the playoffs was good enough after all those years of just horrendous play from the Tiger Cats.
Yeah, I remember it well. With a great diving catch by Stahl in the end zone to tie it up. It was phenomenal.
All right, so sticking with the Ticats, and we've named a few players here. Who's your favorite player of all time?
Whew. You know, that's – I had a tough one with this – a tough time with this. I'm going to go with Darren Flutie. because guy just produced constantly. You know, McManus to Flutie, it was the connection. He produced huge for the Ticats when they needed him most. In that Grey Cup game in 99, he had two touchdown catches, one phenomenal one-handed catch in the end zone. He was just a great player. Not overly flashy, but just productive. You know, he kind of reminds me, or Tasker kind of reminds me of Flutie a bit. You know, he doesn't have blazing speed, but he can get open, and he'll always make the catch. So I'm going to have to go with Darren Flutie, also because I have a Darren Flutie jersey, and I have a lot of respect for what he did and his game.
That's a good pick. I think I talked on the last podcast about how my favorite player ever was Earl Winfield. Mm-hmm. I can't even really put it into words as to why I like him so much. It might have to do with the fact that when I first got into football, he was the star of the team. Like, Mike Carrigan was the quarterback, and like Tony Champion was his running mate at wide receiver. But Earl did it all. Earl was a punt returner, a kick returner, a receiver. He was a jack of all trades. And he was just so much damn fun to watch. So instead of just repeating a bunch of stuff that I've said before, one guy who is a favorite player of mine that played here, it also coincides with the 09 season, was Otis Floyd. I loved Otis Floyd. I can't even tell you what it was about him. When he looked to me like he was born to be a football player and born to be a linebacker. He looked the part and played the part. And when he signed here, it wasn't a big deal, but that big interception he had against BC at the start of the 09 season, I think it was week two, just after that, he just became such a beloved fan favorite. And I was lucky enough when the team brought him back on Labor Day, I think it was 2011. I knew they'd made a big deal. We're bringing Otis Floyd back. He's going to lead the team out of the tunnel. So I have an Otis Floyd jersey. Threw that on. It was the last time I was going to wear it. I don't really like wearing jerseys two games of players that aren't on the team anymore. Mm-hmm. So threw the Otis Floyd jersey on, walk into Iverwind Stadium, get about 10 steps in. Who do I see on my left-hand side? Otis Floyd. So I'm like, oh, my God, I'm wearing his jersey. He's right here. Shook his hand, said, thanks for all those 2 years you were here. They were great. They were awesome. Can I snap a picture? So when we put the podcast up on the blog, I'm going to put the picture of myself and Otis up there. It was even though I was like either in or near my 30s, it was really cool. So he's not my favorite player of all time. It's still Earl. But I really just wanted to mention that that little Otis Floyd story because, man, those 2 years here, he was so much fun to watch.
He was phenomenal. I wanted to throw in another player just as a secondary. I really, really liked Rob Hitchcock a lot.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. He's
phenomenal, you know, Canadian guy, just a hard-hitting, you know, linebacker. Or he was a safety first for a long time, and then I think he got moved up into the linebacking corps. But just so many big hits from him and just gave it his all every game. I really, really like Rob Hitchcock.
As far as I'm concerned, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Maybe we're a couple of homers here, but for a Canadian boy, a Hamilton boy at that, playing for the Tiger Cats for essentially his entire career. I know he had that minor stop in Edmonton to end his career, but...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. There was a great story I read a year and a half ago about, and I'm sure it was older than that, but it just came to my attention, about the what happened and how it surrounded him actually going to Edmonton. And if I can find it again, I'll post it on the link with the blog post that I'll do to show everyone that we got the podcast up. But yeah, like just if there's a Canadian Football Hall of Fame and Rob Hitchcock's not in it, I think that's just wrong. Rob Hitchcock deserves to be a Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we'll switch gears for a second and we'll keep talking about players, but who was the favorite player that you had that never, ever played for the Tiger Cats?
Mike Pringle. I just loved watching him play. He was phenomenal. I mean, you know, he's such a big, strong dude. You know, he didn't have that blazing speed, but, you know, he was just so hard to bring down. And the Alouettes based their offense around him for a couple years before it really got set around Calvillo. And I just love watching him play. He was such a great player. You know, he had the 2,000-yard rushing season. You know, he probably did a lot of damage to Hamilton a lot of times, but man, was he a great player. I actually have a Montreal Alouettes jersey with Pringle on the back. So just probably, well, it was the best. He was the best running back I've ever seen in the CFL production-wise. And I just have a lot of respect for his game and what he did in the league.
Oh, absolutely. Pringle was definitely a fan of Pringle. I got nothing to add to what you said on it. Like you said it perfectly. Mine came down to two players. I expected one of them to be someone you picked. So the Mike Pringle one kind of threw me off. I was expecting you to say, Darren Flutie's brother. I can't remember his name. Doug, I think. I think a guy named Doug Flutie played in CFL, right?
Yes. I thought about that, but he just pissed me off so much when he was a player. So I love the guy. He was phenomenal, but he just made me so mad watching him, you know, get out of sure sacks and, you know, make these amazing plays against Hamilton. And I just couldn't pick him. But yes, I have so much respect for Doug Flutie.
He was, even when he played for Toronto, and obviously you and I have major disdain for the Argonauts, he's just so much fun to, he was so much fun to watch. He could do it all. Like you said, like he would just get out of trouble and go. Like the things he did, like 6 MOP awards in 7 seasons. The guy was something else. But the other player, maybe even more than Flutie, although I really would have loved to have seen Flutie, Doug Flutie, that is, play here, Gizmo Williams. Gizmo Williams might be the most exciting player that I have ever seen in the CFL. A lot of comparisons to Gizmo were made when Chris Williams was here, especially in 2012. But, man, just you get – anytime Gizmo touched the ball, you did not know if it was going to the house. I love – like, he made me want to watch Eskimo games at a time when finding CFL games on TV was difficult as, like, just – is there a game on? You didn't even know.
Yeah.
It's not like now where every game is broadcast. This was back when TSN would show a handful of games and CBC would show a handful of others. But the only thing that you were guaranteed, as far as I remember, is that the Labor Day games would be on CBC, and you'd obviously get the playoff games. But man, just any time I could watch Gizmo Williams play, I took advantage of it.
Absolutely. I remember I went to the 96 Grey Cup in Hamilton, and they were both involved, obviously. And he was really a joy to watch, for sure. That's a good pick.
All right. What is your favorite game that you've ever seen on television?
Yeah, I'd have to go with Montreal-Hamilton 2011 East semifinal in Montreal. I mean, what a great game. You know, the offense in that game was just amazing. You know, you had Kevin Glenn coming in where he had some tough times in the playoffs before that, but he really shined in this game. And I mean, it was just a roller coaster of a game, back and forth, you know, going to overtime, winning in overtime with Calvillo throwing that out pass on third down, and I forget who was the running back. I think it was Whitaker. Dropped the pass, and yeah, I just remember being overjoyed that we finally beat Montreal in a playoff game. You know, the next week, you know, wasn't so great, but watching that game, I was just so entertained. It was just such a classic, you know, CFL barn burner type game. I'll never forget that game. What do you got?
Same.
Yep.
There's a lot of games that I would have watched on TV, but I go to so many that obviously I can't pick them, and we're gonna get into games attended in a little bit. But yeah, that was something like 52-44 or something along the lines of that. Mm-hmm. It had everything. There was some decent defensive plays. I remember Jamal Johnson had a really nice interception of Anthony Calvillo. And you're right, it was back and forth. Like, when you think of CFL games, that is definitely up there. Although, having just talked about that, I realized, no, I just spoke out of my own rear end, because that's not the favorite game I've ever seen on TV. The 89 Grey Cup. I know we lost. I know the Cats lost. But that, to me, is the greatest game, football, across all very different variations of the game that I've ever seen. 43-44 or 43-40 was the final. The Cats were the favorites going into that game too. Saskatchewan was a bit of an underdog.
Yep, it was a big season for the Riders. I mean, they beat the Eskimos in the West final, and the Eskimos were like 16-2 or something.
Yeah, so they were a powerhouse. Yeah, and yeah, they took them out. And maybe one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in my life, Tony Champion in the end zone, the way he could, and he has like his back was all messed up and
broken ribs.
Just the way he contorted himself to make it was, despite the loss, it might be it. No, it, I'm not even going to say mine. No, it definitely, it was the most exciting game that I've ever seen. And maybe it's my 7-year-old self remembering things more fondly than it was, but everyone else that you talk to when you talk about Grey Cup games, they always bring that up as, yeah, that's probably the greatest game ever played. And I've seen a lot of great football games. I thought the 49ers-Ravens Super Bowl a couple years ago when the Niners made that big comeback and eventually lost, I thought that was great.
Yeah,
that was. The USC-Texas National Championship game was when Vince Young took over, awesome. But, yeah, as – I know I said, and yeah, I can't believe this completely slipped my mind, because I think it was also one of the first Grey Cups I remember watching. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember. Like, it was around 87, 88, 89 when I started getting into football. I think we touched on this in the last podcast too. And like the Cats get to the Grey Cup, and it's like, you know, I'm a Hamilton boy, but born here. Like, we just moved, like me and my family would move from Toronto to Hamilton quite a bit because my dad worked there and my mom was working there. I'm like, so we had finally come back to Hamilton, like then we had set up shop in 89 here for good. So it was like we're getting ourselves back into it. And it was just, as much as it sucks to say that your favorite game is a game your team lost, it still it stands the test of time. We're now in 2015. That game is now 26 years old. We'll be 26 years old this year. Still stands up as one of the best football games ever played.
Yeah, I can't say I remember watching it. I was only 4 at the time, but I have watched it back in full, like later in my life. And you're right. It was the best Grey Cup game ever, probably. And that's just a great choice.
I do know a few years ago, I was bored on a Sunday afternoon or something, and I just was on YouTube, and they had the game in its entirety, but broken down into like 10-minute intervals or something like that. And I wish I could find it again, because I'd like to watch it again. I think I watched it that day, which is probably about 5 years ago, and haven't watched it since. But I remember it standing up, even though you know what's going to happen. You know the outcome. You know who's going to win. And then you watch it, you remember all the plays that were made, and you're like, yeah. And it still was exciting, and you still got into it. Yeah.
What makes that catch by Tony Champion so even better is that he had broken ribs. Like, he played the whole game with broken ribs pretty much. So,
yeah. You know, and
just the way he, you know, it must have hurt so bad.
And the way he landed, he lands like right on his back. And yeah, it's exactly. Like, oh.
Exactly.
But he laid out because it was about winning the championship. And he was on the 86 team. I know that because when I was looking up Earl Winfield a while ago, when we were talking about Earl, I know Champion did win a Grey Cup with the Tiger Cats, whereas Earl unfortunately did not. So it wasn't like he was laying out. He's like, I got to win this. No, he was going for a second, and oh man, oh,
it's phenomenal.
Anyway, moving on. We've talked about favorite game you've ever seen. What's your favorite game you've ever attended?
Yeah, well, I got two. The obvious choice is the 90-80s final, you know. I just remember we got the ball back with 24 seconds left. And the kick returner, I forget who it was. It was the running back at the time.
It was, I believe it was Ron Williams.
Yes, Ron Williams. He fumbled that kick return at first, picked it back up, got out to about the 30-yard line, maybe, something like that. 24 seconds left. They make a couple plays, you know, a pass to Flutie to get it close enough. And, you know, 54-yarder, 54-yard field goal. Ozzie comes out, you know, kicks the ball. When I was watching it live, I didn't think it was going to make it. I just, you know, I thought it was going to fall short. And it creeped through those uprights. And I've never been at a game that was just so, you know, the crowd was just so overjoyed. You know, we had the Aussie chance. And I'll never forget that game. It was just so phenomenal. You know, we hadn't been back to the Grey Cup in many years, maybe since, I think it was
89.
Yeah, yeah. So I will never forget that game. It was just one of my fondest memories in my life, really.
I was there for that one, too. So you and I, same place, same time, years ago. It was almost like it was meant to be.
And another place where we were same place, same time was the Touchdown Atlantic, the first one that Hamilton was there.
Oh, in 2011?
Yeah, I was there for that, too.
I just want to go back to the 98 East final. There's so much to remember about that game. The day I wasn't going to the game. We were going to watch it. Me and a friend of mine were going to watch it at home, at his house on TV. And the day of the game, his neighbor said, I got two tickets to the game today. I can't go. Box I, row 5. Remember it like it. I can't remember the seat numbers, but I just – box I, row 5, will never forget it. As my synapse fires its lasts, I will remember that I sat – in box I, row 5, to watch that game. $20 each, he said. You give me $20 per ticket, you guys can have them.
That's a deal.
I was like, you're done. And at the time, 16 years old, I was working my first job, so I had a little bit of money, but it's like $20 to go to a football game. I was taking that any day of the week. So, and it ended up being that. I remember, I think his name was Eric Carter. He was a defensive back for the Cats. He used to do this weird thing where whenever he'd make a play, he'd throw up an X sign with his hands. And me and my buddy were big Eric Carter. I'm pretty sure it was Eric Carter. I think he went on to play for BC. We were big fans. So he picked off a pass in front of us. He throws up the X. We throw it back at him. We pointed at us. I'm pretty sure he was pointing at us because we were doing his little taunt with him. He pointed at us and did it back. It was awesome. And I just remember, as Ozzie's lining up for that kick, not a single person was seated. They weren't seated. No one, everyone was standing. And as it went through the uprights, I have never hugged and high-fived so many strangers in my entire life. It was thinking back on it now, it was cathartic.
Yeah.
The year before, they were something like 2-16 or 3-15. Like they were. 97, they were horrible.
Oh yeah,
they bring in Ronnie Lancaster.
Yeah,
they bring in Danny Mack. They bring in Darren Flutie, and it was like, no, this is going to be something because those guys had just come off getting to the 96 Cup with Edmonton in 90. Yeah, they went 90. Yeah, 96 the year in Hamilton.
Yeah,
they went to the Cup that year, losing to Toronto. So they come here. They bring the coach. It's like, oh my God, we're going to be the Cats are going to finally do. Just the pure pandemonium at that stadium when Ozzie's kick went through. It that'll stay with me for the rest of my life.
Oh yeah, because there's a clip on YouTube of that.
Yes,
and I always forget that Ozzie got injured.
Yeah,
the pile on after that kick.
They started tackling him, and he nicked up his leg or something, and it was like, yeah, I've watched that clip on YouTube. Where it's like they show Montreal score the touchdown. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yep.
And then they show – yeah, I've watched that a few times, not afraid to admit. And it takes me back to 16 years old, November 1998, and just
– Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I was sitting I don't remember the section and everything, but I remember I was sitting directly under the press box, so I was pretty high up there. But
yeah, all right.
It was phenomenal. And another game that I have is I forget the year, but it was the Labor Day game, Hamilton Toronto, obviously, and the game that went into overtime.
That was 2004.
Yeah, Troy Davis had like 200 and some yards on the ground. My dad actually had season tickets that year in the press box, not the press box, but the box where you can get them. And me and my buddy were sitting up there, and he was, I was trying to convert him to a CFL fan, and what a game to pick. I mean, it was just phenomenal game. I'll never forget that one either. Besides the 98 East Final, I can't remember the Iverwind Stadium being so loud, because I remember the press box literally shaking during that game. It was just phenomenal. Were you there for that one?
No, I was living in Toronto at the time, but I did watch it on TV. I remember, was there a fight like near the beginning of that game?
Yes, there was, yes.
And yep, they kicked out like two Argos and a Ticat, or two Ticats and an Argo. So I just remember there was a fight, and then I do remember the overtime. And I remember being so despondent that I was like, a tie?
Yeah, I know.
But at the same time, like 04 was the year they got back to the playoffs, the year they became a competitive team again. The only problem with that game is that, having lived in Toronto at the time, I had many friends there that were Argo fans. I'm fairly certain how they used to do the Labor Day game in Hamilton, and then they'd follow up on the Friday or the Saturday in Toronto with the rematch.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that was the year the Argos beat them like 52-0 the next week.
Oof.
I could be wrong, and if I am, I would love to be corrected. But I used to have Argo friends throw that in my face. Like, yeah, we go to your house, and yeah, we sneak out with a tie. You come to ours, and we just like hand you your butts. But you're right. That game was, watching it on TV, I wish I was there.
Yeah. Funny thing about that was, you probably wouldn't have seen it if on TV, but once, I think it was Bishop that scored the final touchdown to make it a tie, and in a tie, and he threw the football at the scoreboard, the newly attained scoreboard, and the guy, the PA announcer, was like, "Hey, that cost $2 million or something." It was pretty fun. And also, before the game, there was parachuters that came in, and one of them went astray and almost hit the electricity wires and fucking almost got electrocuted.
Oh my God, that would have been something.
It was crazy. I'm glad he missed them.
That reminds me of, I went to a game, I think it was 09, I think it was against Calgary. You've probably seen the clip where the guy climbs the goalpost.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Being there for that was, we're sitting there, and when this is, I didn't have season seats, but we ended up always sitting in section 8 that year because we had a buddy who had season seats with his dad. So after we'd buy tickets, and like getting tickets at Iverwind wasn't hard, especially for a game like Calgary. You could pretty much pick where you wanted to sit. And even if you bought tickets somewhere else, you could just move over. Like, so we were sitting behind them, and they came out of the end zone seats, and you see like two of them go, and you kind of miss the first one. And then there's this third guy. I'm pretty sure it was a third guy. You just see it looked like out of an action movie. He jumps out of the stands, and his feet are kicking like he's riding a bicycle, and he lands. And it's like he may have gotten up, but he really didn't move. And then the one guy scoots up the goalpost, and it's like, yeah, I know these guys, we're not supposed to like cheer these guys on, but man, that was something to see live. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I remember watching that on YouTube, actually. There's a clip on there of it, and it's quite humorous, I must say.
So we mentioned the 98 final. We got a good chance to talk about that. I would probably rank that as my favorite game I ever attended. There are two more. Touchdown Atlantic in 2011 was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It was the whole of it, not just the game itself, but like that was a trip I took with a couple of friends of mine, and it was like a week-long excursion. We drove all the way from Hamilton out there. The weather was just beautiful. for like late September. It was like 20, like I was wearing shorts and like, and it was a fun state. It was a fun excursion. It was a good stadium to watch a game. And I actually thought the seats were comfortable. We spared no expense. It was like, let's just get whatever the most expensive tickets are that we can get right away. Just get them. It's a vacation. Who cares? We actually ended up going, funny enough, to PEI the day after the game. It was a ride out to see the game on Sunday, and then after the game on Sunday, we drove out. Or maybe it was the Monday morning. I think maybe it might have been the Monday morning. We stayed Monday night in PEI because I really wanted to go to PEI. And in my one day there, fell in love with the place. So you might one day have a neighbor in me because I just loved it. Like, oh my god. But I went to a lobster restaurant, Lobster on the Wharf, I think it's called.
Okay, where was that?
It's right on the water in Charlottetown, I guess.
Okay.
The owner, that was the restaurant where the Stampeders went the day before the game to eat.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big story. They went there. I think Henry Burris gave the owner of the restaurant jersey, or like the Stamps just gave him a Stampeders jersey. So we get there and we're waiting for our table, and there's like an actual, like where they keep the lobster, like a lobster store where you can buy live lobsters attached to the restaurant. And there's this old man in there, and he's waves the three of us, and he's like, come on in. He starts telling us all about lobsters. It's like, he picks them up with his bare hands. He's like, here's how you tell they're a female, if they have this. And I don't remember most of what he said, but it was like, it was almost like you picture like a crazy old man being like, I'm into lobsters and come here and blah, blah, blah. So we sit down and I order a lobster, obviously, because that's the reason we went to PEI is I wanted to eat PEI lobster. Mm. So we're sitting down and the owner of the restaurant comes to everyone's table and says, like, how's your meal? Like, and we'll talk to you. So he comes and we're all wearing Tiger Cats stuff because, like, we essentially didn't wear anything but Tiger Cats clothes the entire trip. And he goes, oh, are you guys from Hamilton or are you just fans of the team? And we're like, oh, no, we're from Hamilton. He starts going on about how he's got family in Hamilton and how he's actually a huge Ticat fan. And then we start telling him, like, whereabouts we lived in the city. And he's like, oh, yeah, my family just lives, like, three blocks from where you guys live. And I was like, holy crap. Like, we come halfway across the country and run into a guy who's basically from the same neighborhood that we're all from.
Wow.
And then we were telling him about, we were like, yeah. And we got there and there's like this crazy old man who's like telling us about love. She's like, oh yeah, that's my father. And, he's like, yeah, if he sees you standing around waiting for a table, he will bring you. He does it with everybody. But I just thought it was really cool. Like it was like, we drive all the way from Hamilton to PEI to go eat at this one lobster restaurant. And what are the odds that the owner of the place has Hamilton connections? Yeah. He even said jokingly, he's like, man, I was thinking of poisoning the Stampeders so that they wouldn't play very well. But based on how the game turned out anyway, the Cats won like, what, 55-24 or something? Yeah. He goes, they didn't really need any help. Obviously joking, he wasn't going to poison the team. I don't want anyone getting any ideas. But it was that whole trip and everything that came about it, everything that I did, gives that live experience a little bit more – means a little bit more to me. But the 2013 East Final in Toronto, you know, just like 98, it was – like the Cats are getting over the hump. It's they had the terrible year in 2012. And being there for that, getting there early, we went to one of those tailgate parties at Boston Pizza. The atmosphere at the Dome was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like loud from the opening kick, like from the second you got in there, it was loud. To the second you left, it was loud. It finally, you know, getting back to the Grey Cup for the first time since 99, doing it by going into Toronto to beat the Argonauts.
So good.
Everything surrounding that game, like the first half where it was back and forth. The Argos had that lead, and then the Cats came back, and then that second half where they just dominated them. I don't think the Argos scored at all in the second half. I think Ricky Ray and the Argos offense were on the field for like 8 minutes or something ridiculous. The Cats just controlled the ball. And, of course, because of how much I hate Chad Owens, the very last play of the game where I don't know if he fumbled or if he was trying to lateral or what the hell he was doing. But when he gets hit on that kickoff and like the ball just goes straight up in the air. And I think it was Mark Beswick who scooped it up in the end zone for just for no reason. It was a touchdown. The game was already over. But just everything about it, the Ticat fans that stayed while they were handing out the trophy, Bakari Grant wearing the Argo Sucks t-shirt as he's accepting his final trophy. Like, it was just – I know it's new, so it's a fresh memory. But, yeah, the East Final in 2013 definitely plays a huge part in my favorite fan experience at a game.
Yeah, I remember a couple of my friends went to that, and Buddy texted me, and at the start of the game, he's like, I can't believe how loud it is in here, you know? And I wish I would have been there because it was such a joy to watch. And in the first half, I thought, oh, God, you know, Ricky Ray came out, and he was just – you know, on fire, you know, he was
Ricky Ray. He was hitting everything. He was doing what Ricky Ray does.
Yeah. Phenomenal guy. That's a great choice too.
Okay. Let's move on. What is your favorite play of all time? The one that you watch and go, that's the one that I will always remember.
Yeah, this was a tough one.
There's so many, right?
There is so many, but I'm going to go very recent, and I'm going to say the Bank's second return in the East Final. Yeah, I mean, you know, 4 minutes left. The game was still within, very much still within reach. And, you know, the way that he got out of the situation, and it just like all of a sudden he just breaks down the sideline. He's like, and I was just like, oh my God, he's going to do it again. He got past the kicker, just down the sidelines. I was jumping up and down. It was just, at that point you knew, okay, we're going back to the Grey Cup. You know, you had the feeling like maybe this is the year. Turned out it wasn't, but that was, you know, just tops off like a spectacular game for Banks. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's being recent. That's definitely, that might go down as one of the all-timers. Mm. I'm going to go with Champions Catch in 89. I know we've already discussed it at length, but oh my God, just everything he did on that catch, just to make that, I can gush over it for hours. I'm just going to say Champions Catch and we'll move on. What was your favorite play from last year?
I got it.
Go with the, obviously you picked the Banks play as your favorite play of all time. So I'm assuming that's your favorite play from
last year. Yeah, I got to go with that one.
That's pretty much my answer too. It's tough to top the way, like you said, the way he escaped right at the beginning, mm-hmm. darts, jukes, cuts. And it was like, no, oh my God, he's going to go, oh my God.
Yeah.
But in the interest of not repeating ourselves, I'm going to pick his first, return. I think the second one was better, but the first one, again, as with pretty much everything on here, I have a story about it. Where I think it happened just before halftime, and there's four of us in our season ticket group, and one of them decides, she's like, I got to go to the bathroom. So she goes to the bathroom because the Owls were – I think it was after the Owls had – whatever they did on first down, they're going to second down, and I'm pretty sure it was second and long. So she's like, I'm going to go now, beat the halftime rush, maybe get a coffee and get back. So anyone who hasn't been to Tim Hortons Field, I'm not sure if they know this, but – they don't allow you to come back up to your seats while the play is going on. Oh. So while the play is on, you have to stand in on the concourse or like at just before where the seats are. So you're not obstructing anyone's view. I think it's a pretty good policy.
Yep.
So she goes off to the bathroom and me and my one friend are standing there and I'm like, okay, so the Owls punt here. Maybe Banks gets a little bit of a nice return. Maybe the Cats can get a field goal before halftime, because I think at the time Montreal was still winning. I think it was 14-10.
Yeah, they were up. They were up. I know that.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, okay, maybe they go into halftime with a little bit of momentum. That might not be bad. And I'm saying that as the punt is in the air, and so Banks fields the punt, and I'm pretty much just ending my sentence, and it's bing, 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 and I'm like, oh my God! And we're jumping up and down, and we're high fiving, and we're hugging, and one of the girls that's with us, she's really tiny. So I'm picking her up in the air because you can throw her. She weighs like 90 pounds. And it's like, oh, holy crap. Like, okay. And I turn to him and go, well, that's much better than getting a good field goal range. So then my friend who was at the pisser, she comes back and I'm like, and it, here's the thing. She always misses really great plays. It's always like, she was like, oh, I was going to watch the game, but I got busy doing something else. It's like, oh my God, you missed the greatest game of all time. And she's like, well, of course I did. Of course I did. And she's coming back up and I'm like, she gets fake angry about these things. So I'm like hesitant to say like, you know what happened, right? She's like, don't worry. I saw it. They make us stand there. I was standing there. I saw the whole thing happen. I'm like, oh, thank Christ. I didn't want her to yell at me during the game. But yeah, that was just like, oh, that whole game though, really, when you think about it, was,
yeah, that play really turned the tide, you know.
It was the one that kind of like flipped momentum in Hamilton's favor. The Owls played a heck of a game up to that point. SJ Green was abusing everyone within sight. Mm. And then Banks turns it. And like, obviously my favorite play of the year should be the punt return he had in the Grey Cup, but oh, that one didn't count. all right. Last favorite. I saved this one for last, 'cause I thought this would be, this would have the biggest difference in answers, because we probably don't own the same piece of memorabilia. But what is your favorite piece of Tiger Cats memorabilia that you own?
Well, I got to go with my signed Stalla jersey. I had the opportunity of meeting him. He actually came out to the island a couple years ago now. He spoke at a fundraiser for minor football, and it was just great meeting him, and I have the jersey I can see right now hanging up on the wall. I'm very, and actually, there was a auction too, and I got his game worn St. Mary's jersey also, which is also signed. So,
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So those two would have to be my favorite memorabilia for sure. I have some other stuff, but that's at the top of the heap.
That's all right. Not bad. Not bad. I got two, much like yours. I do have a signed Arlen Bruce jersey that I got. The Cats do these, or used to. I don't know if they're going to do them anymore. They used to do those like black and gold days. And like after they would show, like they do this practice type scrimmage thing. And afterwards, they would do like a kind of a autograph signing with the players. So because I'm an idiot, when Bruce was traded to Hamilton in 2009, he put number 4 on his jersey. And like as soon as they were available at the store, I was like, yeah, well, I'm getting one. Because I was a big Arlen Bruce fan. Like, I know he's a knucklehead, and I know all the stuff that he's done. Like, after his career's over, like, he's not exactly the best person in the world. But I just loved watching him play. He was a great player.
Yeah.
And when he got traded here, I was hugely excited. That might also be why 2009 is one of my favorite seasons, because they went and got a playmaker such as Arlen Bruce, who was still in his prime. And he – and – oh. Anyway. So – yeah, I got the number 4 jersey, and then he switched his number to number 1 the following season. Oh, and boy. Like an idiot, I bought that one too. So I had these two jerseys, and one of them I was like, well, he doesn't wear number 4 anymore, so probably never going to wear this again. And I was like, oh, you know what? They do these black and gold days. They let you meet the players. You know what? I'm going to take this down. And it was like kind of a wet, dreary day, so I was like, oh, crap. Maybe it's not the best day to get an autograph. But he was there. Really friendly guy. Like, asked you your name, had no, like, would have talked my ear off for, like, hours if I would have let him. Really nice, like, surprisingly nice. Like, I know people often compared him to, like, your Randy Mosses and your Terrell Owens, and I know he's, like, a little aloof, like, on social media, and, like, he kind of does some weird stuff, but man, when you meet him, like, person to person, really, really nice. I was like, look, I got two of your jerseys. I bought this one. Do you mind if I get this signed? He's like, absolutely no problem. Puts a signature on it. Took a picture with him. And then I went and got it framed. So it's like the Bruce and 4. Or it's like a beautiful frame. Like red back matting. It's really nice. It's I haven't figured out a place where to put it yet. And I've had it like in this frame for over 3 years now. And I just can't decide where I want to put it. But that's one of them. But probably my favorite piece of memorabilia. I own an official CFL 1972 Grey Cup lunchbox.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it's the cart, like it's in a plastic. It's still in its original like plastic bag with like the stapled cardboard piece. Maybe I'll snap a picture of it again and put it up with this podcast so everyone can see. It looks like it's made out of like, I think it's made out of plastic, to be honest with you. Again, I've never opened it, so I can't really tell. And like the cardboard that like keeps the plastic sealed is all brown and dog-eared and cost me $10. When I was a younger lad, sometime, you know, early teens, one of the guys lived down the street was like, "Look, I got a bunch of these. You want one? $10." And he sold one to me, and the buddy that I went to the East Final with in 98, he bought one. No idea if he still has it, but I still got mine, and I have a ton of Ticap memorabilia. And like when I finally set up everything the way I want it, I'm going to pretty much have a wall or maybe multiple walls dedicated to all the Ticat stuff I have. But yeah, the 72 Grey Cup lunchbox, especially, you know, that was in Hamilton and they won the Grey Cup.
Yep.
That holds a special place. So that's a really cool piece of merch.
Cool. Questions.
Questions. Favorites are over. That was a lot of fun.
It was.
So let's get into some questions. You hit the tweet machine yesterday and picked up some good ones, as I can see.
Yes. The first one comes from our good friend Eric. He wants to know, you know, just our general thoughts on Corey Sheets and where he might land.
Oh, crap. We got to talk about the Riders. They're going to hate me.
I know.
Well, if he comes back to the CFL, which is, I guess he's saying that he's going to get cut by the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of where this is originating from. I saw that Eric actually wrote a piece on his blog, which I urge you all to check out. Goallinepost.blogspot.ca, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's an excellent site. He does some great work there. We got him on the team at Blogs Kiwiwi, but he's doing his own thing. It's really good. I say you check it out. He's got a piece on Sheets and talks about sort of where he sees him landing. Cuts out a bunch of teams, obviously. Essentially ends up back in Saskatchewan, which is where he's a great player.
Yeah.
So any team would be lucky to have him. But like, for instance, this is a Ticat podcast. Ticats don't need Corey Sheets. Corey Sheets is not coming to Hamilton.
No.
Calgary does not need Corey Sheets. He's not going to Calgary. Edmonton does not need Corey Sheets. He's not going to Edmonton. To me, it really sticks between Saskatchewan, where he might be comfortable, and Toronto. Again, I know we always usually seem to give these free agents to either Ottawa or Toronto, but Toronto has done much. Their running back situation isn't great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. I could see them maybe making a splash to bring in a Corey Sheets type player. The one thing I do want to touch on before you give your opinion is I've seen some tweets out there by people saying that the Rider should bring Sheets in and have him compete for a job. Mm-hmm. I think that's ridiculous. Everyone competes for jobs. No one's guaranteed anything in training camp. We're talking about a guy who missed four games in 2013 or else might have broken the single season rushing record. The guy was unstoppable in 2013, especially in the Grey Cup where he, I believe, set the Grey Cup record for rushing yards and won MVP.
Yeah, I think it was 197 yards.
Yeah. You don't bring a guy like that in and tell him, oh, yeah, we're going to give you a contract, but you got to compete with Anthony Allen and Jerome Messam.
Yeah.
Two guys that, like, Messam's a good player, but, again, I think that one big year he had, I think it was 2010, maybe 2011? Might have been 2011. With Edmonton? That's not, like, Messam's not going to do that again. And Anthony Allen, as good as he has looked in spurts, he's not Corey Sheets. Corey Sheets should not be asked to come into any situation and be told, you're going to compete for a job. No, Corey Sheets, even at 30, even coming off an Achilles injury, I believe.
Yeah, something to do with his knee, I know that.
Should not be asked to come into any team and told, you have to compete for a job. He is a star player, maybe doesn't have very many years left on him. But any team that brings him in, he's the guaranteed starter. So this idea that he should compete for a job is poppycock.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, if he doesn't get another look in the NFL, which I don't think he will. I mean, you know how the NFL, you know, spits out running back. I just think it's either Saskatchewan. I could maybe see Winnipeg. They're kind of a running back maybe. But I totally see him re-signing in Saskatchewan if he's back in the CFL, which I believe he will be. So that's my opinion on that. Another question from Eric. Thoughts on Stevens once the Owls?
Good signing by the Owls, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
They are not by any means set at quarterback. Crompton could be the guy that leads them back to a championship, but they have now insulated themselves against the fact that he could flop or not progress as well as he should. I'm a big Dan LeFever fan. I know we've talked about LeFever previously, and I think we both gushed over him. If given, and he, you know what? He's not being asked to go to a team and start right away. So he can sort of work his way into Montreal. And if Crompton fails around midseason, they have a guy that can plug in there and you know can play. We watched him play last year. We know he can do it. And with the weapons in Montreal, oh my God, Nick Lewis, Fred Stamps, SJ Green, Brandon Whitaker, Terrell Sutton, Rainey, Marty Gilliard, Rogers, like they're loaded with offensive weapons. If Crompton can't do it, it's solely on Crompton. Bring in LeFever. Yeah, good call by Montreal.
Yeah, I really like it too. Just a phenomenal backup that can produce. And, you know, like you're saying, he could be a starter if Crompton falters or gets injured or whatever. I don't think they'd miss a beat with LeFever coming in. So I
And
think.
he would add a dimension that Crompton doesn't really have, which is the running.
Absolutely.
I don't. I know Crompton has scrambled in the past. I don't know. I think I remember him at Tennessee slightly. I don't remember him being much of an athletic quarterback. LeFever, he busted off 100 yards rushing in a game last year. In addition to throwing for over 300, so we know what LeFever can do. Both with the arm and with his legs, especially, that would add a dimension to the Owls' offense that would make them really, really tough to stop.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right. Another one from Eric. There's a lot of ones from Eric.
He's a very inquisitive young man.
He is. Thoughts on Quebec City expansion?
Well, I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
I would prefer if they expand, if the CFL expands, to expand out east to not necessarily where you live, but in that area, your Halifaxes, your Monctons, somewhere out there, to make this a coast-to-coast league.
Yeah.
I think there is an, you could speak to this better than I can. I think there's starting to be a bigger appetite for Canadian football out there. I know, I remember when I went to Touchdown Atlantic, there were a lot of NFL fans in the building. We sat by a bunch of New England Patriot fans, ugh, wearing Rob Gronkowski jerseys, who spent a lot of the time checking their phones, looking at who was winning the Bills Patriots game. The Bills actually beat the Patriots that day.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So I know that there's an appetite for football out there. I'm just not sure if the CFL brand is something that's as strong out there that could support a team right now. That's where I would like to see them expand. If that is not an option, Quebec City to me is the next best place. You get that natural rivalry with Montreal right off the hop. You add that 15 to the east, which would help balance out the schedule. They're rabid for their university ball out there. To me, it'd be a good fit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with the reasons that you said. I sat beside an NFL fan too at the Touchdown Atlantic game, and it really bothered me. He was making fun of the league the whole game. I was sitting front row, had front row tickets, and this jackass was sitting beside me making fun of the league the whole game, and I'm like, why are you even here? Like, you have front row tickets and you're just, you know, dogging on the league the whole game. I wanted to I wanted to smack him in his face, but
and the thing is, in a game like that, high scoring, the Cats offense was on fire. Calgary has a lot of great players. Like that was an exciting game. Yeah, it was ended up being a blowout, but like that's not the thing. You know what? Some of these games that happened this year, these like, you know, 10-7, 13-12, you know, 16-8 games. I think there was a 6-5 game at one point or something like ridiculous like that. Maybe it was 5-0. I don't remember. I know BC and Ottawa played some ridiculously low scoring game. Okay, you know what? You want to dog on that, like the offense, like fine. Okay, you know what? Like
I dogged on that. You know,
like, the CFL value markets itself as an offensive league, and this was the year of the defense. Fine, I get that. But like a game where there was like 70, almost 80 points or something like that scored. What like? I know we're getting a little off topic here. I hate these people who just. You don't have to like one or the other. You can like both. I like both. I'm a fan of both leagues. I'm a fan of all types of football. You don't and the NFL's not any better because you dog on the CFL. The CFL's not any better because you dog on the NFL. They both offer different games. You can enjoy both. Sorry. Yeah. We had Mikey's rant on the Red Blacks and Stampeders. That was Josh's rant on NFL versus CFL.
I've been fighting that fight since I was born, pretty much, you know. It's just like people just they just won't give it a chance. They're either trying to be like the cool factor, like or
yeah, the NFL's all about money and they have the best players and blah 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 blah. Yeah, whatever. Okay, great. But there's not. Continue. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, I mean blah 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 isn't a great description, but
anyway. No, it's pretty accurate. That's what it sounds like to me when they say it. Blah blah. Like they're like the adults in the Peanuts cartoon, wah, 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 wah. I don't hear it. It's in one ear, out the other. I don't care.
Exactly. It's either it's trying to be, you know, the cool factor of, you know, this league sucks, blah, blah, blah. Or they've seen one game that wasn't great, and they're just turned off because of the one game.
But, yeah, I agree. Like the NFL, you see a 10-7 game in the NFL, and all these fans are like, oh, you know, it was hard-hitting defense. You know what? 10-7 games can be exciting in either league.
Yeah.
Like that the Argos and Ticats played on Labor Day this year. The final score was 13-12. And that was a hard hitting, that was a loud atmosphere, that was there was not a lot of touchdowns scored. But you know what? There were two the entire game. One by Bakari Grant and one by some guy in Toronto. But you don't like it doesn't have to be Swayze Waters had those beautiful like it's punting, but you know what? He had two gorgeous punts landed out at the one. I don't care if he plays for him. That's impressive to watch.
Yeah.
You Simone Lawrence laid a lick on a running back in that game. That's fun to watch. There were sacks. There were interceptions. It doesn't have to be high scoring. It doesn't have to be, you know, 60-59.
Mm-hmm.
But CFL fans, we're accustomed to offense, so I understand why. But the NFL fans are like, oh, a defensive game is just – it's just hard-hitting defense. But in the CFL, oh, it just means the players suck. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I agree completely. And the funny thing was, you know, there were so many points scored in that touchdown Atlantic game. And you know what the guy's response was? Do these guys play defense in this league?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. You can't – you know, just can't win with these people.
Can't win with these idiots. Okay, wait. What was the question again? Quebec City expansion. Oh, yeah. That's where we're at. What's your thoughts on that?
Right. Sorry. I think it'd be great. I mean, you know, like you said, the national rivalry, I think it would turn up interest in Montreal and Quebec from the whole. With the Maritime thing, I don't know if I just don't know if they're going to ever build a stadium. It's been 30 goddamn years, you know, since they've been talking about it. And I just don't see it happening anytime soon, you know, and it's not going to be in Moncton. It's not going to be in Moncton because, you know, that's a good center area for the whole Maritimes. But I believe it's got to be Halifax to make it work. And I just don't know if they're going to ever build a stadium there. So I see it more likely being Quebec City. I don't know if Pep Stadium is good enough for the CFL or if they have to put more seats in, but if I had to bet, I would say it'd probably be Quebec City before the Maritimes.
And obviously, like, I don't think the league is going to expand anytime soon. Getting into Ottawa was important just because Ottawa had a team before and they were renovating the stadium and they have stable ownership, and I'm I'm at, right at the front of being happy that Ottawa is back. But I think before we even consider expansion, we got to get the other teams right. Like, there's a big mess down the QEW for me right now in Toronto. That situation has to be solved before we can even contemplate adding another team. Because as much as I don't want it to happen, what if the Argos are like, we can't find a place to play. We either got to move or we got to fold. There's one headache that needs to be solved before the dominoes start falling on either an Atlantic team or a Quebec City team. We need to sort of push the expansion topic to the side. I know it's a discussion we've been having, like you said, for 30 years. Mm-hmm. But we got Ottawa back. Let's focus on that. Let's get the Toronto thing done. Then we can move on to where, whether it's Moncton or you think Halifax out there, which is, you're probably correct. Halifax will probably be, if there is a team out there, Halifax will probably be the home base, or if it's Quebec City.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Another one from Eric. Okay. This is a tough one because we don't really get to see the CIS. But who would you want the Ticats to draft with their eighth pick?
Well, the two biggest positions that I find that come out of the draft that can be impact players are either along the offensive line or in the receiving core. Mm-hmm. And looking at the Ticats are later in the draft. Again, I cannot name a player. Like you said, we don't get to watch enough CIS because it's just not on TV. You can follow it, but it's one thing to see stats or be like, oh, that guy dominated. But unless you see it, you don't know how well they've actually done. I would, if I was the Cats, I'd focus on the wide receiver position. Andy Fantuz is in the last year of his contract. I believe he's 30, 31, 32, something like that. He's an older player. If he gets re-signed, he's not going to be re-signed at the dollar value that he signed with the Cats in 2012. They just signed Spencer Watt, but he only signed a two-year contract. They lost Sam Giguere. They do have some receivers in the pipeline. Giovanni Aprile, Matt Coates.
Yeah.
I feel like a jerk for not remembering if that was his name. They got him. I'm sure they have some guys on the practice roster, but I think their Canadian receiving depth could use a boost by a first round pick. They have a bunch of guys on the offensive line, Canadian on the offensive line that they are grooming. You got your Joel Reinders, your Carson Rockhills, your guys like that. So I don't see the offensive line as a big priority. A defensive lineman obviously come out of the draft and perform pretty well, but Hamilton does not need defensive linemen. They especially don't need Canadians on the interior defensive line. They got 8 million of those guys. So I would, if I had to pick a position over a player, because I can't really give you a player name, I'd say receiver is where I would hope they would be looking. Come draft day.
Yeah, I like that answer. I had a tough time with this too, but I was just going to pick an offensive lineman. You know, you can never have too many Canadian offensive linemen stocked up. And I was looking at the, Justin Dunk's draft preview type deal. And, I don't know necessarily how good this player is, but Danny Gruel from Laval, he's 6'6". 305 pounds, 24 years of age. Great school that pumps out a lot of talent. So, I'm kind of talking out my ass here, but I'd say Danny Gruel if I had to make a pick.
Those are completely uneducated selections. Mine, yeah. Receiver, whoever it could be. Yours, a lineman from Laval who we think might be good.
Yeah. Brian Broom wants to know, he just wants to know about the shotgun formation and, why it's so dominant as a formation in the CFL. He asked when it started, and I don't know when it started, but maybe some just general thoughts on why it's so dominant as a formation.
Yeah, much like you, I can't answer the question as to when it started. I remember when you posed that to me and we were going back and forth. I was like, I do remember – and I know this isn't when it started, but I do remember realizing it in 2008 when Printers was the starter in Hamilton, going, man, he's in shotgun almost the entire time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, well before that, was shotgun formation the predominant, the primary offensive formation. That's the first time it really clicked in my head. It's like, oh. And now you've seen the NFL go into your Peyton Mannings, your Tom Brady's, your Aaron Rodgers pretty much almost exclusively in shotgun as well. I think the reason it changed is the CFL has always talked about itself being a passing league. The quarterback standing, what, 5 yards behind the center, however many it is, he can scan the field a lot quicker because he's standing there and he doesn't have to drop back while doing it. It takes one less thing off his mind. He can look around. He can make his reads easier. I think it's just an easier formation for passing the football. And with the waggle and with the extra player and with – I think it just makes it – I honestly just think it makes it easier for the quarterback to make his reads and throw the football.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that. You pretty much nailed it. So on to another one from Eric. Just grade the Ticats offseason.
That's tough. It's hard to grade them, especially they didn't do much because they didn't need to do much. Mm-hmm. They brought back Tasker. They brought back Banks. They brought back Hickman, Grigsby. They brought back, they gave an extension to Gable. They brought in Anthony Woodson. They brought in Spencer Watt. And that might be the only two free agents they even signed. I don't think they've signed anybody else that was available in free agency. A letter grade is difficult. I'm happy with the moves they made. There seems to be continuity, not just in the coaching staff, but now in the player roster. Drew Edwards wrote an excellent piece about how this is now Austin's team, how he's brought back something like 40 or 42 of the players that were on the 46-man roster in the Grey Cup or something like that. Am I going to be a homer and give him an A? I don't know. Maybe. I can't really give him a grade. I like the moves they made. I think the team is still a legitimate championship contender. They haven't done anything I think that's like egregious. They didn't let anyone go that it's like, how dare you let them go? Or they didn't bring anyone in. It's like, why would you sign that person? I'm happy with what the Cats did.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there was some questions with Tasker and Banks. Maybe they try the NFL again. Or Banks try the NFL again. Tasker's never been there, but they brought them both back, both 3-year deals. You know, little questions about Hickman. Maybe he might try to go back. He signed a 1-year contract. They didn't need to go out and sign a bunch of free agents this offseason like they have in the past. And like you said, you know, with Drew Edwards, my boy.
Does he know that you're his boy?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
He likes to make fun of me on Twitter every once in a while, but
yeah, but we all do because
yeah, exactly. Fun of. Yeah. but yeah, I you know, I'd give it a, if I had to give it a grade, I'd give it a B+, maybe even an A-, because you know they just brought so many important pieces back, and it's Ken Austin's team, and he's building it the way he wants, and I trust in Austin 316. So there you go.
And you know what? The point you touched on, the 3-year deals for players, Banks, Tasker, Gable signed a 3-year contract extension. That tells me these guys are ready to make not just the CFL home, but Hamilton their home. Yeah. Tasker, out of all three of those three main guys, is the most likely to be able to try the NFL when his contract is over. I believe he's 24.
Yeah.
So by the end of his contract, he'll be 27. Still, if he again progresses as he has his 2 seasons in Hamilton, could give the NFL. The NFL might be interested in him. Banks will be 30, I believe, when his contract's up. He's a CFL guy now. Great, because I love watching him play. Glad he's a Tiger Cat. And Gable will be late 20s, maybe 28, perhaps, maybe even 29 or 30 when his contract's up. There's no way he's gonna, especially with how injury prone he is, or at least was last year, and he dealt with injury issues in 2013 as well. I think this just means that these guys are here to stay as long as the team wants them here. And like you said, this is Austin's team. It's in, you know, I know it's cliche to be like, in Kent we trust, but you know what? When the guy has been a head coach in the CFL for 3 years and he's made three trips to the Grey Cup, I'm not going to sit here and question him on pretty much anything anymore. Until he fails, he's a success as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he could be a little bit nicer to my boy Drew, but you know, that's another topic. Okay, Joe Pritchard wants to know, you know, funny thing about these questions, two of these guys are south of the border, but anyways, best stadium experience outside of Hamilton?
Well, the only games that I've attended outside of Hamilton, I've been to Toronto, where the in-game experience, it's like Skydome, you know, let's be frank, it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the 2013 East Final specifically was amazing.
Yeah.
So if
you it's get not that, bad if it's packed, like there's a lot of people in there, but
when there's an atmosphere to it,
yeah,
the sight lines are still atrocious, but it can be a fun place to watch a game when it matters.
Yeah.
I've been to Montreal, and I loved McGill. Beautiful, like the views, like being in Montreal. Montreal's a great city. Everything about it, loved it. And I went to Touchdown Atlantic, which we talked on earlier. It's hard because, like, TD Atlantic, you know, University of New Brunswick, that's where the stadium's located?
Yeah, University of Moncton, I believe, yeah.
Oh, University of Moncton. Okay, my bad. It was hard, like a lot of temp stands. It was a makeshift operation. I still, again, and I have that story I told earlier. There's a love with that place for me. I guess I'd have to say Montreal. Again, my experience is limited. I can officially say that I'm knocking off Ottawa this year. I know I was a little skeptical about going in November, but I'm saying to hell with it. I will be in Ottawa for the game on the 7th. Any Ottawa listeners out there, you want to buy me a beer, you want me to buy you a beer, you want to meet up, let me know. So I'm hoping with that place being new, that might surpass Montreal. But right now, I'll say Montreal. Montreal is a lot of fun. The Cats got hammered the game I went there, but the fans, like, because they're so successful, they weren't jerks about it. They were, you know, they ripped us, and like, especially me, because I can be loud and obnoxious. I'm a big fat guy. What else do I got going for me? But you know what? Walking out of the stadium, talking to Montreal fans, guy was wearing an Al's Dave Stella jersey, and we just got to chatting, and like, no, Montreal was, I'll say McGill University, Percival Molson Stadium, thumbs up.
All right. I've been to Montreal, Ottawa, Calgary.
You've been to Calgary?
Calgary twice, 93 Grey Cup and 2000 Grey Cup.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's – oh, Toronto. I've been to a couple of Toronto games. I'm going to say the same thing as you, Montreal. You know, the one thing that really stood out to me when I was a – I was probably, I don't know, 17 or 18 at the time. But the girls walking around, you know, offering shots.
Oh, with the shots. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's you know, I've never seen that before in any other stadium. And I just, you know, you just got the good vibes in Montreal. There's, you know, it's a really good party atmosphere. And I just really enjoyed it. And Calgary has, I like McMahon Stadium as well, even though it's old now and it's kind of, you know. But I have a soft spot because it was my first Grey Cup in 93. And if I had to pick one, I would say Montreal just because of the atmosphere and the fun of it.
Montreal, when the thing that stood out to me, now that you mentioned the girls with the aprons with the shots in them, was that as we're walking out of the stadium, because it's in Quebec, different liquor laws. Like in Ontario, third quarter, you're cut off.
Yeah.
Not so in Quebec. We're walking out and they're like, anyone want a drink? And it's like, holy, like, not again. I knew going in I knew that it wasn't the same, but having it solidified like that, like that's, oh yeah, wait, we're in Quebec. We're not in Ontario. Yeah. Like just, they're literally walking out of the stadium. I'm mere 50 feet from the front door and they're asking if guys want to take a drink with them. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, I also like the walk, like up the hill to the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Be cool.
We made the mistake of driving there and getting out of the parking lot was a mess.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things, like, again, it was kind of not a spur of the moment thing. Like, we decided, it was the same people I went to TD Atlantic with. we decided, yeah, let's go to Montreal this year. They were playing in the summer, so it's like, oh, Montreal in the summer, we'll spend a weekend there. The game was on a Thursday. We stayed, ended up staying until Sunday, and it was great. You know, Montreal's awesome. But yeah, we didn't know that driving to the game was probably a mistake. We should have parked somewhere and then either walked or taken transit. But yeah, so anyone who's deciding on going to Montreal that hasn't been, find a bus or something. Just do not drive to the stadium and park at the stadium. It's a nightmare getting out.
Absolutely. All right, last question here. Have you ever broken anything out of anger watching the Ticats play?
No. I don't tend to get that angry. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you're one of those guys that's like, I broke a TV with my foot once. I threw a hammer through a window. You just, cause you're very emotional, and that's, you know, that's why I love you, buddy. You get pissed off. I'm mellow. Yeah. I get angry and I'll be like, I'll curse and, you know, maybe like ball up a fist or punch a couch or something. But no, when something bad happens, I usually am just like, my mood gets worse. I'm more of a like upset person. Like the play that never happened that we will never speak of. Like when that got called back, I was more just like sad than I was mad.
Yes.
So no, I've never broken anything to my recollection out of anger because of a outcome of a game or anything to do with the Ticats.
All right, where to begin here?
Is it a long list?
There's a couple. I'll tell a little story. When I first moved to PEI, I invited a friend I worked with to come over and watch the Labor Day game. And it was late in the game, I believe, and the Ticats, it was 3rd and 1, and they didn't make the first down on a QB sneak. And I backhanded a fan into the wall, and the guy I just met him like a couple weeks ago, and it was just
great,
like,
first impression.
Yeah, he was mortified, and there was a little awkward silence for a while. But yeah, I backhanded a fan. I didn't break it, but I broke a lamp last year. It was the Edmonton game early in the season where they had the last play at like the 5-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get it in. Yeah, I threw a lamp. I've broken some glasses.
Drinking glasses or reading glasses?
Drinking glasses.
Okay. And I picture you with glasses on, just like in frustration, grabbing my face, going, "God," just snapping them in two.
Stupid eyes.
I don't need to see.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch this. I don't want to see this garbage.
I'm done with sight. yeah, that's pretty much it. With the play that we shall not mention, I did not freak out. I was just more, you know, head in my hands type deal, like bummed out type deal. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for breaking things.
Oh, boy. Well, that seems like as good an ending as we could ever hope for. Mike breaking glasses and breaking lamps and inviting a buddy over. Someone he barely knows and smashes a fan against the wall. I can't think of a better out than that. So for this episode of Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Michael Graham.
Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.